Well, spring is almost gone and summer just around the corner, which means it's time once again for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden, who is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, glad to have you back with us for another show tonight.
It's my pleasure, Bill.
So let's get started. Over the past few years, we've opened up our spring program with an update on two invasive species. One is the Formosa termite and the other one, the emerald ash borer. Where are we at with these two critters and what are they doing that we don't like?
Well, let me start off with the Formosan termite and just give everybody just a little bit of background information on that. It is an invasive species. It was introduced in this country and it became a really hot item in Louisiana back in the early 1990s when it started damaging some of the historical property in the French Quarter in New Orleans. And they've developed very good attractant baits for them in order to monitor the populations. And the problem with the Formosan termite is if you think of a regular termite colony being in the hundreds, Formosan termite colonies are in the thousands. And so they can do a lot of damage a lot faster than our regular subterranean termite that we have here in the Arklatex area. It continues to be a problem, but we have better monitoring techniques now, and so we can normally get things under control before it becomes too bad of a situation. We've also done a lot of educational outreach, and one of the other scary things about the Formosan termite is that it can actually attack and eat living wood. And so they can attack living trees rather than just dead wood that our native termite species can attack. And so we continue to monitor it, and it will flare up from time to time, but it's being controlled to a certain extent. Now, with the emerald ash borer, we're still doing what we call surveys, trying to locate exactly where is it at. And the lucky thing about this part of the world, as far as our listening area is concerned, that the predominant tree is not ash like it is further east and north, but it's the oaks. And the emerald ash borer does not attack oaks. It's very host specific. It will only attack ash trees. And a lot of times it'll cause a certain type of a branch growth on the ash trees that allows foresters and urban landscapers to recognize that ash tree has a problem and that they can get it treated. And normally what we're treating those with is what we call a systemic pesticide, something like a imidacloprid, that's poured onto the soil, is taken up by the roots, and it spreads throughout the vascular tissue of the tree. And so we have a lot of tools out there, both in recognition, in monitoring, and then treating the trees to hopefully to keep them alive and keep them going.
So unlike the pine beetles, where I think the remedy seemed to be you had to cut down the tree.
Right, right.
Because you just wanted to get rid of the tree and I guess incinerate it or destroy it somehow along with the bugs. This is able to be treated while preserving the tree.
Yes. Yeah, the southern pine beetle, Dendrocronus frontalis, that one is basically cut the tree down. By the time you recognize there's damage, it's probably too far gone, and you want to get the beetles out of that location before they spread.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Beverly Burden, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we are taking your calls tonight at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502, the number to call. All lines are open right now, and we'd love to have your questions. In the meantime, we saw a story that came around back in January about a kind of a creepy-looking critter, and a picture of this creature is on the What's Bugging You webpage for today's show. It's called the granary weevil, and can you tell us about this critter?
I certainly can. First of all, a little bit about weevils. Weevils are the largest family of beetles, and beetles are the most abundant type of insects in the world. And so what makes weevils so abundant is because they are very, very host specific. And you have the pecan weevil, the rose weevil, the cotton weevil, the corn weevil. And so these grain weevils are so small, they can literally, the female can lay an egg on a piece of grain. Just think of a piece of corn or a piece of rice. And the little grub can burrow into the grain, feed on that, go through its life cycle, develop into an adult, and then exit. And so, and once they invade a source of grain, it just multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. Now, if it's in a large silo, then you obviously we have problems. But oftentimes people that have seed for birds will get an infestation of grain weevils. And sometimes you might actually bring it into their house and it might have got, say, corn, dried beans, rice that you got from the grocery store. They will also invade flour, the milled products as well. The other big pantry pest, if it's not a beetle, is going to be the Mediterranean meal moth. And we oftentimes get a lot of calls mm-hmm. about those as well. And so I did a talk at Stephen F. Austin the other day. And I said, you know, people always ask me, when are the insects going to take over the world? And I just say, they already have. And they just everywhere. Allow us to live with them. And once you think you're safe from them, you're actually not. They'll take advantage. Insects are very opportunistic. You know, just leave one crack in the armor, and they can get in and wreak havoc.
I think every sci-fi movie producer over the years has probably been an entomologist because these creatures make good sci-fi critters.
They do. They do. And, in fact, a lot of times, especially those old B-grade sci-fi movies, they don't make them that much anymore, but... I can watch those and say, oh, I can tell you exactly what they modeled that after.
Right, yeah.
You know, and I remember one, it was a giant praying mantis that attacked the world. And Mother Nature has already figured out a lot of this crazy stuff that science fiction writers think that they make up, but they don't.
Yeah. All right, and you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. And we've got two callers online. Please hold on. I've got one more image to get to here on our webpage. And this creature looks like a crab to me, but it's not. It's a spider.
Some people do call them crab spiders, but there's a completely different family of spiders that are called crab spiders because they actually walk sideways the way crabs do. This is a spiny-backed spider, and it's in the jumping spider group. And it looks like a little hockey mask kind of a face, and it's spiny, but it's also in the orb weaver family as well. So not so much jumping, but more the orb weavers. I kind of misspoke there for a second. And they have little shields on their back, and they're oftentimes very, very colorful because that warns predators. You know, I have this heavy shield on my back, and I've got these bright colors, and bright colors mean that you're not supposed to mess with me. And so it's a physical and a behavioral protection method for them, Bill.
And it does. It looks like Freddy from Friday the 13th. It looks like a spider that's coming after
you. With red spiky hair.
Doesn't have a hatchet, so fortunately so. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. David from Minden, please stay on the line. Leon from Bossier City is up first. Leon, what's your question? What's bugging you tonight?
Well, first I want to say how entertaining and enjoyable the show is, and thank you all very much for doing it. My question has to do with little critters in the past couple of weeks that are biting me. I spend a lot of time outside, and this little black guy is about the size of a gnat, and he bites me, and it itches, and it swells up, and at night I've got to put stuff on it.
Yeah, those are called biting midges, and they're very, very small. And guess what? Their immatures are aquatic. So with all this rain we've had, this is actually not the first call. It's the first call tonight, but I've been getting calls about these little black gnats. Some of them will have a little bit of a red mark on them as well. And, you know, of course, just like with all biting insects, you can wear long sleeves, but who wants to wear long sleeves in this heat? Most mosquitoes are active dusk and dawn, but these things are active all during the day, and so that's a problem with them. And wearing DEET insect repellent will help you a little bit, Leon. And you're probably, you know, I am very susceptible to mosquito bites. My immune system overreacts, and that's what it sounded like your immune system is doing. You're hypersensitive to the saliva, actually, of these insects. And yeah, good anti-itch cream, cortisone. I'm not a medical doctor, so I have to, that's what I do for myself. And something else that sometimes works, and I'm just speaking personally here, hazelwitch solution sometimes.
Really?
Well, it kind of dries out. And so that get a little bit of that, or sometimes just regular rubbing alcohol will help a little bit too. It kind of cools that burning sensation.
How about Calamine?
Well, I've been
lotion.
Putting hydrocortisone on it after I shower at night.
There you go. That'll work too. Sorry, I wish I could tell you some magic way to get rid of these things, but there's such a multiple point source of these. It's not like many other things.
What is their lifespan, or will they be gone in another couple of weeks?
They should be. And here's another bad news for all the people out there. Last Saturday, I saw my first pair of mating love bugs. The love bugs are coming back. And so I'm surprised if we might get some calls about those tonight too, Bill.
Yep.
Well, at least they don't bite me.
Exactly. You just got to keep your car washed.
Yeah, they make a mess of your car, that's for sure.
Thank you all very, very much.
All right, thank you, Leon. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident ornithologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we've got two calls online and lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Henry from Nacogdoches Police, from Nacogdoches, please stay on the line. We've got David from Mendon up next. David, what's bugging you tonight?
Hey, David.
Can you hear me?
Can
you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, good evening. My home is situated on a 5-acre tract of land in a residential neighborhood in northeast Louisiana. It's primarily pine trees, but I do have a few hardwood trees. And just about a week ago, I had a pine tree that appeared to be live. The bark was on the tree. It had its normal pine needles, but it fell over. And this was not a mature pine tree, but I would say, I don't know, but maybe 10 years old. But anyway, when it fell over at the base of the tree, there were holes where the stump is, which I'm assuming were pine beetles. I don't know if you can see a pine beetle or what the determination is, but should I be concerned about my other pine trees, and what would you suggest? Because I have quite a few mature pine trees in my yard.
Okay, David, it is highly possible that those were pine beetles that damaged that tree. What you need to do is, and this is how I would take my own advice, I would inspect my other trees. You can see the small exit holes, especially if you peel some of that bark back. And if you have a huge concern, what you need to do is you need to contact a lady by the name of Valerie West. Many people here know that the local extension forester for many, many years was Ricky Kilpatrick. Ricky's retired, and Valerie has taken that work over. So the LSU Extension, just look it up, Google it, the LSU Extension Service, Forester Valerie West. I think her office is somewhere over in Bossier, but I would get an extension officer out there, and she would be much more qualified to give you some advice than I would, because she could come on site and she would know.
Well, one issue I have, a question is, I thought that when pine trees are attacked by pine beetles, that one of the first indicators is the bark falls off, but the bark had not fallen off this tree. But when the tree did fall, all the bark just easily peeled off from the tree when I cut it up and burned it.
Yeah, the bark off of the tree, that's not always a telltale sign. But because most of the time you actually have to peel the bark back in order to see the exit holes of the beetles. And they're very, very small. They're like pinhead in size. But they will be there.
Okay.
So that's
so
not...
You can't always go by that. Do you think it's possible other trees might be at risk?
I think it's extremely possible.
Okay. All right, then I'll contact this individual. Thank you so much.
Good luck, David.
All right. Thank you, David. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We've got a full bank of lines right now, but wait a few minutes and you'll be able to get in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have Eric and Chris on hold right now. Henry is up next. Henry from Nacogdoches, what's bugging you tonight?
Good evening, Doctor. How are you?
I'm fine, Henry. What can I do for you tonight?
I'm driving. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Okay, great. This question may have already come up in a previous show, but we're having the invasion of the millipedes. And, you know, I've talked to pest control people about it, and we're getting it under control. But what is the story? Why all of a sudden, I'm talking... not thousands, probably millions are coming through,
mm-hmm.
and they're inundated. They're completely covering the exterior of the homes in my neighborhood. And of course, any way they can find in, they're getting in.
Yeah,
they're not. They don't taste too bad if you put a little garlic and olive oil. They're okay, but you know, they're everywhere, and we can't. You know, they're not painful. They don't bite or anything like that, but. What's the deal? What is their cycle? I heard it's a 7-year cycle, or we're in a flight path, or a...
Millipedes don't fly. They don't have wings.
No, not flight path. I mean, they're traveling a certain path.
No, it's just every once in a while, they will have a population explosion. The conditions have to be just right, and we've had some really strange conditions this past winter and this past spring as well. And sure. You're absolutely right. The positive thing about millipedes is that they are not harmful. However, they have a defense that's called reflex bleeding. And if you pick them up, they will excrete something from their joints, and it's a very smelly substance. And some also tell me, I've never figured this out myself, that it's rather bitter tasting, and that's why sometimes the birds don't want to eat the millipedes, especially when they get up into these large populations. And so what I would do is I would just get the hose ready, spray them off down the side of the house, find out where they're getting in, and oftentimes people say to me, oh, okay, what's the difference between a millipede and a centipede? Most of the time you're going to have millipedes. When they die, if they curl up in a coil, then they're going to be millipedes. Because when centipedes die, they don't curl up in a coil like that. But find how they're getting in, block that, put in maybe some extra weather stripping or something like that. And, you know, if we knew everything about how Mother Nature worked, we would be better prepared to control Mother Nature, and we know we cannot control Mother Nature, so it is what it is. We know that they have these population explosions from time to time. They will come into people's houses, get the vacuum cleaner out, and scoop them up.
Right, but it's not a cyclical thing. For so many years, they reemerge. It's just whenever. It's random.
Whenever the conditions are right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for your call, Henry.
Thank you, Henry. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have two callers on hold right now. Eric could please hold on from Gilmore. We've got Chris up next. Chris from Shreveport, what's bugging you tonight?
Good evening. Thank you for doing this, Doctor, and Bill as well. My question concerns what I consider the three most bothersome pests: mosquitoes, red bugs, and fire ants.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is very sensitive to mosquitoes, and for some reason I need no DEET on if I take her with me because they all go after her.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if we go in the woods, the red bugs love me and don't really bother her. Is there something about human pheromones that attract one over the other? And if so, what could I take, possibly a sulfur pill to keep the red bugs away from me? And my other question along the same lines is, when I have large outbreaks of fire ants, I don't seem to have as many red bugs in my wooded area. And I wonder, do fire ants eat red bugs?
Oh, I'm sure they do, because fire ants will predate on any type of small insects, mites. Red bugs, also called chiggers,
yeah,
are in the group of mites. Just like follicle mites and dust mites and things like that. Very, very closely akin to ticks, but they have a little bit of a different physiology going on. But I know that mosquitoes will bite me before they'll bite Wally as well.
Right.
And so there is certain chemicals that are given off through the skin that the mosquitoes pick up on. As far as red bugs are concerned, they're normally a little bit more attracted to thermal heat, and for some reason they also like to get down into tight places like around your socks or your waistband and things like that.
Lord,
and so
the truth.
Yeah, and so oftentimes people will take and tuck their pants down into their socks,
mm-hmm,
and do other tricks like that, make sure that their shirt's tucked in. And as far as the fire ants are concerned, they will predate on the red bugs. And the fact that the red bugs will attack you before your wife. Now, you use the word pheromone. I don't think they would be cueing on pheromone, not by definition. A pheromone is a chemical,
yeah, mm-hmm,
that's used to communicate between similar, between the same species.
Sure, like deer and whatnot.
Yeah, and but the right word here would be either allomone or caramone.
Oh, I've never heard that. I was just using that generically.
Yeah. It's and those are chemicals that are used to communicate between species, not within a species.
I see.
And so just a little bit of biology terminology,
yeah,
you know, that I like to play around with sometimes.
Are you still experimenting with roaches?
I just started my colony back up, actually, and I had some out at the Barksdale Air Show at their STEM event this last weekend. And so, yeah, I'm always messing with something, Chris. It's all
I got the
time.
I got the biggest kick out of you saying the reason you experimented on roaches was because nobody ever complained about it.
Well, that's true, but I have to be careful about what I say on air sometimes, because I know there's some people that do care.
Yeah.
But what I can say is they're not federally regulated as some other experimental organisms are.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, but yeah, keep wearing your DEET. That's going to help with the chiggers and the red bugs. And
what about sulfur?
You know, I've heard of that.
I'm not allergic to sulfur. Now, many people are, and I wouldn't recommend doing this, but my father taught me to put flour of sulfur in a sock, and I beat my ankles with that sock and dust the powder on me, and I don't seem to have as much trouble.
Well, Chris, it sounds like you're a long-time listener. Let's do this. Try it. If it works, call me back in June,
okay,
and we'll get the word out. People also used to take an old Coke bottle and stick straw hay down it and fill it up with turpentine and put that on their socks, too, and I wouldn't recommend that
either.
So, you know, you have to make sure that the treatment isn't the toxic.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So,
well,
but thanks
for
your call.
Much. And y'all have a good evening.
You too.
All right. Thank you. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Guaranteed to get in pretty quick. We have just one more caller online, Eric from Gilmore. What's bugging you tonight?
Hello, how you doing?
We're doing great. What's up with you? What's bugging you, Eric?
Well, I got these flies out at my house, and I can't get rid of them. They outside. There's a bunch of them on the back porch all the time.
Are they bigger than a house fly, smaller than a house fly?
They're house flies.
They are house flies?
Yes, I live out in the country too, so
Yeah. Well, apparently something is attracting them to your back porch. Does your back porch lead into your kitchen?
It does.
Yeah.
It's but it's French doors.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the sun faces it all the time.
Hmm. Well, they may be using that wall as a heat basking area, you know, because insects are, we don't use the word cold-blooded anymore, but insects are what we call poikilothermic. And because they're poikilothermic, before their flight muscles can warm up and they can fly, they have to be able to absorb a certain amount of heat. But they're probably also being attracted to some type of smells. So any time an insect is attracted to something, it's either have to be structural or chemical. And if it's chemical, it's normally due to the smell they're giving off. And so you might try burning some incense out there, and if that might get rid of them as far as the smell is concerned. Or if it's me, I'm kind of mischievous. I oftentimes will just take my water hose and just blast them off, you know. And I feel like, you know, they have a choice to fly off or not. And in time, that might actually deter them. But if it's chemical, you're going to have to do something about the smell. Unless you know there's something out there that they're eating. If you have a lot of moist houseplants out there, they may be using those moist houseplants as a place to lay their eggs.
Well, we've been having a lot of rain here.
I know it.
And
really? A lot of rain.
It only happens, it only happens when it rains, seems like.
Oh, yeah.
My back area, it floods. So I'm thinking it's...
Well, that may be the key right there, Eric, because all flies, doesn't matter what kind of fly it is, but all flies have to lay their eggs in a moist environment. Some are purely aquatic, but some, it just has to be a moist environment that's rich in organic nature, and that describes our soils around here to the T. And so, yeah, it's the rain.
Okay, and I got one more thing.
Okay.
I got these ants with wings on them. They didn't came inside the house. What kind of ants are those?
This time of the year is probably fire ant reproductives. Now, I want you to capture one, and I want you to look at two things for me, Eric. If one set of wings is longer than the other one, then they're a flying ant. If one pair of wings is almost the same length as the second pair of wings, then it might be a termite. Also, look at their antenna. If their antenna is elbowed and shaped, like at a right angle, it's an ant. If it looks like Mardi Gras beads, it's a termite. If it's a fire ant, just shoo them back outside. If it's a termite, Eric, you probably need to talk to some professional.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you, Eric. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we go next to Brian from Shreveport. Brian, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, what's bugging me tonight is mostly pantry moths. It's going to eradicate them.
Okay. This is what you have to do. And right now, I have an infestation of pantry moths in my bird seed out in my garage. And as you know, moths are nocturnal. So when I open up my back door to my garage and turn on the light, I see all these moths flying everywhere. But anyway, if they're inside the house, inside your pantry, or wherever you keep your food material, there is going to be what I call a hot spot. I have had two infestations of these. One time, it was in some dried beans, and the other time, it was in some pecans I had stored in there. Now, the caterpillars, the females will lay the eggs, and the caterpillars have very, very strong mandibles. They can cut through most things that you would call zip bags or cellophane bags, things that might come with noodles or things like that. You have to find the hot spot. You have to take everything out of the cabinet, find out what's infested. If it's infested, throw it out, and you have to wipe everything down. If you can take the shelves out, take the shelves out, because when the caterpillars get ready to pupate, before they metamorphize into the adult moth, they like to crawl in between tight spaces. And they'll crawl in between a cabinet shelf and the back of the cabinet if there's any little gap there at all. And so you have to do a complete sanitation thing and then take everything you have that's not infested and go invest in some heavy plastic things like Tupperware or fiberware, you know, the type of stuff that you can get at the store that's thick enough so those little mandibles can't crawl through it. And then you can go onto some websites, and there's actually a pheromone trap that you can put in your pantry that will attract the females and the males in, and that way you can monitor whether you have controlled that population or not. And that's how you're going to take care of your pantry moths, Brian.
Terrific, because I thought we had gotten them one time, and then apparently we must have missed one of the hot spots.
You have to be very, very, very diligent. It's a pain, and it's tedious, but if you really want to take care of the problem, that's the way you're going to have to deal with it.
Thanks a lot, Doctor.
Good luck. Good luck.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we have lines pretty full up right now, but give it a few minutes, and they will open up, and you can get your call in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Sherry from Pollock, please stay on the line, as Jessica from Whitman, also please stay on the line. We've got Rob from Coushatta up next. Rob, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I have a problem with leaf-footed bugs on my flowers and vegetables. Any way that would could spray them without being too terribly toxic to my bees and pollinators?
Yes, sir. This is what I would suggest that you do. I would go to the store and get something that is what I call a pyrethrin. And follow the directions on the label. Of course, we always have to tell people that. And you'll know that it's a pyrethrin. You have to read on the active ingredient. Somewhere on the label, it's normally in the front, down in, at the bottom, it'll say active ingredient. And if that active ingredient ends in the suffix T-H-R-I-N, then it's a pyrethrin. And it could just say home, you know, flower and vegetable spray, insecticide. And also make sure you spray, not today when it was so windy, make sure that the wind is calm and that won't carry over to perhaps some of your more flowering plants that may be attracting the pollinators as much.
Because I raise yucca. I have some beautiful flowering yuccas, and they just completely cover the flowers on the yuccas. I'm talking about to the point that they won't set seed. And I had a population of yucca moths come in last year and somehow set a few seed pods because yuccas require yucca moths to pollinate them.
So, yes, sir.
And I wanted to save seed but these bugs just completely covered the flowers and sucked them dry, and they all fell off. And then they got on my potato plants and sucked all the life out of the new growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so is Demon WP, is that a pyrethroid?
Say that again.
Is Demon WP wettable powder, Demon wettable powder, is that a pyrethrin, like a pyrethroid too? I spray that on my house for forensic control on my soffit and my fascia and my walls and all that.
Really, that's a trade name, and I would have to either look it up on the computer, which I don't have access to right now, or I'm just, it will have an active ingredient somewhere on there. But the fact that it's a wettable powder, I like the sound of that, because normally wettable powders mean that they're actually going to stick to the plants a little bit better than just an aerosol will.
And it has no smell when you mix it up. It is.
Oh, that's nice.
It's an awesome. You spray your carports down and all that down with it, and there's no smell to it, and you'll find those big dead water bugs laying, dead other pesky bugs. We had these spiders that would make these little webs that would get full of dirt and dust and look terrible, and we sprayed those, and we scrubbed the house down and sprayed those, and they hadn't come back so far.
Yeah,
and it stops off most of all. It'll kill wasps and fire ants. If you mix it up and pour it on the fire ant bed, it'll kill the fire ants. But it's just pretty good stuff, but I was just looking
for I'm going to have to look into that. But, yeah, if it ends in T-H-R-I-N, it's a pyrethrin. If it ends in I-O-N, then it's an organic phosphate, like malathion.
Oh, I don't use that. That's rough. I don't spray that in my office.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't use malathion. And if it ends in A-R-Y-L, then it's a carbaryl, like seven dust. And so there's little tricks like that that you pick up on.
Telling me that. I appreciate that.
No problem. Good luck with that.
But these bugs, they're just, I've never seen a population explosion of these leaf-footed bugs like this year. They suck your tomatoes. They ruin your peas. They're just terrible.
I tell you a good name for them, Rob. They're the mosquitoes of the plant world because they
exactly.
suck everything. You like that?
Yeah, that's a good one. And in the summertime, as soon as they kind of fade away, those terrible introduced stink bugs come out and start sucking on your vegetables too.
Same thing. Yep, that whole group that have those piercing, sucking mouth parts, and some of them can actually transmit plant viruses and plant pathogens as well. And so it's just a nasty group all the way around.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for telling me that. I really appreciate it. When I get back to town, I'll see if I can find those pyrethrinoids.
Okay, very good. Pyrethrins.
All right. Thank you, Rob. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we have a couple of callers on hold right now and a couple of lines open at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502. Jessica from Whitman, please hold on for just a little longer because we've got Sherry up next from Pollock, Texas. Sherry, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, for Dr. Beverly. My question is not really about local bugs and insects, but I thought that if anyone could answer it, it would be you. My family is soon vacationing to Belize in Central America. And I was just concerned about, you know, some foreign bugs and insects that might be a little weird or a little harmful or different than what we're used to. And if we can use, our regular bug spray in other countries.
Sure, as long as you don't tell anybody, I suppose. Just keep it to yourself. But in Central America, this is one thing that you need to watch out for. There is something that's called the human bot fly. And the fly will lay its egg on a mosquito. The mosquito will then be attracted to the human. And while feeding on the human, the warmth of the skin will stimulate the egg to hatch, releasing a very small maggot. That maggot is so small, it can enter into the skin tissue, and as it grows, it feeds on the subcutaneous fat layer, and sometimes the connective layer, and it's completely, you'd never feel it. For some reason, there's not enough nerves there, and you never know you're infected until it gets ready to pupate, and then it'll cut a little hole in the skin, pop out, pupate, and then hatch as an adult fly. It doesn't transmit any diseases, but it's kind of creepy because nobody wants to think of a little maggot crawling underneath your skin. And there's been lots of people that will travel to tropical areas and come back into the United States, and a couple of days later, they'll find a little hole in their skin, and out will pop a human bot fly. Now, there's also squirrel bot flies, and here in the South, every once in a while, a squirrel bot fly will accidentally lay an egg on a human. But it's a very rare thing, but it has been documented.
Very creepy.
And it's called a squirrel
bot fly.
They're on squirrels?
They can be, yeah. There's horse bot flies, there's sheep bot flies, there's human bot flies. But the human bot fly does not occur naturally inside the United States.
Okay. So is that something that comes from the ground or comes from trees or just that's in the air, a human bot fly?
Well, think about it. The female bot fly finds the mosquitoes. Mosquitoes are very prominent in the tropics. Mosquito finds a human. Mosquito feeds on a human. The bot fly that's on the mosquito hatches, falls off the mosquito, burrows into the skin of the human. That's the cycle.
Oh, my. So any type of, like, mosquito repellent to repel the mosquitoes would work?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. How about that? That great question. I don't get to talk about human butt flies very much on the show.
It's a horrible answer, but I'm glad to hear it, and I'm glad I called, and I knew that you would be the one that could answer that question.
I appreciate your confidence, Sherry. Enjoy Belize.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. And that reminds me of guinea worm, which is a plague in Africa, a horrible one that actually does destroy human tissue and cripples people. But
it does.
The idea of those growing under your skin is a bit creepy if you think about it. All right, you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we do have lines open now at 800-552-8502. 800-552-8502. Mark from Shreveport, please hold on. Jessica from Whitman, Louisiana, you're up next. What's bugging you?
It's actually Quitman with a Q.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry. They typed it wrong.
Okay, I have two questions.
Okay.
One is, I had carpet beetles, but then they disappeared. Did they just disappear, or they just hiding from me?
Carpenter bees?
Beetles.
Oh, carpet beetles. Okay. Completely different. Carpet beetles, the thing about, do you actually have pure wool rugs?
No, I have three cats.
Okay.
I know they eat the fur and stuff, so I didn't know if that's why.
They might.
I leave my windows open a lot. So I figured maybe they flew in, because I also have house plants.
Yeah. Carpenter beetles are very, very small beetles. They're about half the size of a grain of uncooked rice, if regular long grain rice. And they're immatures. Will eat any kind of natural fibers, mohair, any kind of hair. Sometimes people will get a bad job done on taxidermic work, and they'll feed on those as well, as long as they're natural fibers. And the best way to get rid of them is just incessant sweeping or vacuuming. If you have carpet, vacuum. If you have hardwood floors or just hard floors, sweep. And make sure, if you do have a lot of cats, to make sure that you groom them properly so there's not a lot of stray fluff around for them to feed on. Most of the time, people recognize they have a problem with carpenter beetles when they see the immatures. The immatures are kind of a very sharp triangle in shape, and they have a lot of different little spiky hairs coming off their body, and they will molt and leave these skins behind as well. And so I would not advise using any insecticide in the house to control the carpenter beetles. I would just use sanitation, cleaning, those types of methods.
Okay, I did that. I didn't know if it was enough, though, because, like, I read a lot of stuff online. It was like they are very hard to get rid of. They're gone now, so I didn't know if they were just hiding from me or if I actually did a good enough job.
You probably did a good enough job, because if you didn't, that you would probably still see signs. Were you seeing the immatures crawling around?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the adults aren't that visible most of the time, but they will come to lights at night, and they are good flyers, and so coming through the windows is a very, very possibility. You had two questions, Jessica?
Yes, my other one, it's not like a pest problem. Where is the best place for me to find little jumping spiders?
Oh, I love little jumping spiders.
I do macro insect photography.
Oh, great.
And so those are my favorite subjects.
Well, you know, they're predators. And so I would find areas that have a lot of vegetation diversity in, you know, areas that would harbor their prey. And they are ambush predators. They don't build webs. And so you can't look for the webs. You just have to look for them. And also, you know, if you've taken pictures of them, you know one of the key characteristics of the jumping spiders is they have those two large middle eyes in their face. And sometimes, especially at night, with a white light, they will reflect and glow green.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. A lot of spiders' eyes will do that, but I've been out in the middle of Coosatchee Forest during times, and I'll have a headlamp on, and I'll turn around, and I'll look in the forest behind me along the ground, and I'll see all of these green little dots, and those are all spiders looking back at me. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of creepy the first time you see it, but then you think, yeah, you know, of course they're out there. They're hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
You can always come to my office, too. I have one as a pet that lives in my office.
There's a satellite dish behind my apartment, and every time I go out there, there's a new one out there. Mm. There's been, like, three different ones living on the satellite dish.
Oh, so you have discovered the satellite jumping spider.
So it's, I forgot what the name is, but when it matured, it turned orange.
Hmm.
And then there was another one. I think it was a baby of that one because it looked exactly the same. And then there was another one that's like has an orange body and a green head.
They are with some of the most colorful spiders out there. Absolutely, they're my favorite group.
And they're so sweet.
They're my favorite group.
That's the only spider I've ever held.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We have almost all lines open right now, so you'll get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Just one more caller ahead, and that is Mark from Shreveport. Mark, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, sir. We're having a problem with carpenter bees. What can be done about that?
Okay, this is how you deal with carpenter bees. First of all, let me explain to, since we don't have any callers on hold, let me take a few moments and talk to you a little bit about the biology of carpenter bees. The female will take, and it's almost like a half an inch hole, and they prefer untreated wood, and they will drill into the wood against the grain of the wood, and they'll go in there a few inches, and then they will make a right angle turn on either side and do tunnels that way. Then they go gather a lot of pollen, and they'll stuff it with pollen. They'll lay an egg on it and kind of seal that off, and they're basically making little nursery galleries in the wood. Now, you can go get what I would suggest you do, you can go get some insecticide, especially a dry powder insecticide, something like 7-Dust, and you can put it in the entryway, spray it up in there, and that way, as they're coming out, they'll pick up that insecticide. Now, the males won't burrow into the wood, but they will hover around a territorial area where the females are boring in order to protect their territory. The females have a stinger. The males do not. And the females will not sting unless you basically grab a hold of them. Now, the immatures will... hatch and come out the hole. What you can do, one other thing, after the immatures come out, and this is going to be later in the summer, take a piece of wood put a dowel stick or a wood putty and clog that hole up, because they will go back into those holes in order to overwinter as adults. And so that prevents them from overwintering and staying in that same territory. The other thing that I've done, I go to garage sales a lot of times, and every time I see an old badminton racket, I'll buy it, and I'll just keep it out on my patio. And you can just knock them down and stomp on them, because they're not aggressive at all. And that's what we call mechanical and non-chemical control, the stomping.
Oh, really?
That's what I do. And that's generally what's said in the literature, you know, a powder insecticide to take care of the adults while they're to stop them from drilling, and then plug those holes up so they can't other adults can't come back in there and overwinter in those holes.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Nope.
My mom's having a big problem up in
The other thing you can do is paint the wood, because they really do not like painted wood. They prefer untreated wood. Even if it's varnished or stained, they'll still use it, but painted, they don't like it at all. So that's an easy fix.
I talked to a bee guy the other day out at over in Village Green townhouse area, and he said that latex caulk that they will they don't like that, and they won't chew through it, but they'll chew through silicone. He said they'll do that, and I talked to a guy today, and they were chewing through. He put wood putty in there, and they chewed through the wood putty.
Yeah, you got to wait to put the wood putty in there until after their breeding season is over.
Mm-hmm.
But the latex caulk, maybe so. I'd have to give it a try. Look into it.
Yeah, I thought I had met you years ago. I don't know, River Oaks area or something. I don't know.
But you also have to be very concerned about calling somebody a bee guy, because there's lots of different types of bees. These are not like honeybees. These are not like bumblebees. Mm-hmm. These do not live in a hive. These are solitary bees. And so that makes a big difference in their behavior as well.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I appreciate that.
Good luck with it.
Thank you a lot.
All right. Thank you, Mark. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. And we've got a couple of callers online. Mary Ann from Gladewater, please hold on. We've got Katie from Lufkin next. Katie, what's bugging you tonight?
I was wondering if you guys could tell me. I've been seeing a couple of bugs in my house, and I don't know what they are. I can't find out. I've looked online, and I can't find them anywhere. It's a little black bug, and it looks like a mix between a spider and a grasshopper.
Spider and a grasshopper. Give me a size.
It's about, oh gosh, maybe a quarter of an inch or half an inch.
Does it look like it has wings?
Yes.
It does have wings.
Very small.
And it's black, small. Why do you say it looks kind of like a spider?
Because of, it's got eight legs.
Oh, it does. Are you sure the eight legs aren't, you're not counting the antenna as a set of legs?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know much about bugs. I didn't think it was an antenna because they're all the same, except for it has on the back the two grasshopper-type legs.
Uh-huh. I believe what you're probably seeing, because crickets have long antenna, and sometimes people do mistake the antenna for legs, and I believe what you may be seeing is the body kind of humped up a little bit?
Yes.
That's called a camel cricket.
Oh, God. Okay.
They're normally a little brown or tanner than that, but I can see them being, and they're probably immatures, and they may have, a lot of times they'll have wings, but they'll just have wing pads. The wings won't really be fully developed on that. And they're absolutely harmless, but let me say something, Katie. You have fantastic powers of observation. If you're able to see all of that on such a small insect, I think you might have missed your calling. You could have been an entomologist, Katie.
No, I don't do well.
But here's another thing, and I'm glad this came about, because I want to encourage everybody that's listening tonight, if they can snap a picture, and especially if it has some kind of a size reference, mm-hmm. if you can lay a penny down next to it or something like that, and send it to Bill Beckett, and he'll give you his email address in a moment, and we will put it on the next show, because we love to get stuff like that, especially if it's unusual and unique that we can share. And one of the reasons I do this show, Katie, out of the goodness of my heart, is because I consider it educational outreach from the LSUS University to the surrounding community in partnership with all the other educational things that Red River Radio does for the public. But that's
it's a wonderful thing.
So let's grab me a picture of it and send it to me. I'd love to see this thing.
There you go.
Okay.
And you can send that picture, by the way, to everybody listening, to W. Beckett. And Beckett is spelled B-E-C-K-E-T-T. W. Beckett at lsus.edu. And if you look on our page, our website, redriverradio.org, and click on the What's Bugging You post for the show, you're going to see a whole bunch of pictures that people have sent in of various insects that sometimes we get through them all during a show. Sometimes we don't, but we try to, and we started out tonight's show with a number of these as well.
And Bill, since this is really the kickoff show for the year of 2019, mm-hmm. What's Bugging You airs 6 o'clock every third Tuesday of the month. month.
Yes.
So go ahead and put that on your calendars, folks.
There you go. And we've got one more caller online. That's Mary Ann from Gladewater, Texas. Mary Ann, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, y'all. Thank y'all so much for doing the show. It's so wonderful.
You bet.
So much interesting information. You mentioned when you were talking about carpenter bees, Dr. Burden.
Yeah.
The male does not sting.
That's correct.
So I'm wondering if that is what I used to catch when I was a child at my grandfather's. He had a huge wisteria bush outside his back door. And I used to go out, and I just remember them as bumblebees. I didn't know the difference then. But if they had the white dot on their face, I knew that they didn't sting. And I don't know where I learned this. These are the ones that I used to catch.
Mm-hmm. First of all, thanks for reminding me to tell people how you can distinguish between bumblebees and carpenter bees. Bumblebees will have hairy abdomens, hairy butts, and sometimes with yellow on them. But carpenter bees will not have any hair on their back abdomen. And like I said, the males don't sting, and Marianne, that's because a stinger and the wasp bee insects are really a modified egg-laying device. It's a structure that we call an ovipositor. And so a stinger is a modified ovipositor, and that's why females can sting and males cannot. Great question.
Okay. So
and about the white dot, most of the time, carpenter bees in general will have a yellow dot or a white dot on their head. Whether that is indicative to the males or the females, let me do some research on that. Or else you just got incredibly lucky as a kid and caught the right ones. Maybe the females were off boring into wood, and it was the males that were attracted to the pretty wisteria bush. Let me look into that.
Okay.
Because if that's true, then that's a great little piece of trivia.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Marianne.
All right. Thank you. And you've been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. We've got a little bit of time left, and we still have some photos up on our website that we haven't gone through, especially one. This is of what looks like a little maggot or a caterpillar, and Jack and Nadine Charity sent this in. The others we have identified, so you can go on and look at the website and see all of those images that people have sent in. But this one is a mysterious one, is it not, Beverly?
It is. I'm almost 98% sure that this is some type of a caterpillar, because maggots do not have a scleroterized head. Scleroterized is a term that we use when their exoskeleton is hardened and not soft and squishy like the rest of the body. But what I need here is some type of size reference. I don't know if this thing is a quarter in length or if it may just be a grain of rice in length. So if we can email Jack and them and find out, but if they're listening, if they could go ahead and email us and tell us, that might save us from one. And so that's one that I really wanted to talk about tonight and emphasize with the viewers, that having some kind of a size reference thing is really, really a key thing.
And if you want to see some cool bugs, go to our webpage for What's Bugging You Tonight, because we got some interesting insects up there.
Yeah, this next one, it looks like something looking back out at you.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we call a click beetle, which is another one of my favorite beetle families. And that's because if they turned upside down, they can make a clicking motion, throw their body up in the air, and they will continue to do that until they land right side up. But this has two large dark spots on its head surrounded by a lighter colored orbit. And it looks like two big eyes, but they're not eyes at all. They're there to scare away predators, thinking that they might be eyes looking back at them. And this is called the eye elater click beetle. Definitely. One of the largest click beetles that we have here in the United States.
And it's definitely a creepy one. So, Well, Dr. Burden, I want to thank you for joining us again for another edition of What's Bugging You.
You know, Bill, I love this. I told you today I've been really, really looking forward to getting things back and going.
There you go. And we look forward to the next edition of What's Bugging You next month. You have been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. And we'd like to thank each of you for calling in tonight and joining us for this edition of What's Bugging You. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burden, with assistance tonight from Wally Derleth, Tim Schnell, and Sheila Lawrence. And you are listening to KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches, and KTYK, Overton, Tyler, Kilgore.